Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of The Hoffcast. This is Wednesday, April 25th, and we've got a special guest on the show today. I talked to my good buddy and very funny comedian, Robbie Slowick. Robbie is originally from Florida, and he moved out to Los Angeles in like 2011 or 12, and became good friends. And then he moved away to New York to do comedy there, and was immediately snapped up by Jon Stewart to write on his HBO show that in the end didn't end up going to air, but he wrote on it for like a little over a year and got to spend almost every day with Jon Stewart, so that was pretty cool. Just a funny dude, a smart guy, world traveler. I think you guys are going to enjoy our conversation. This week, I don't have a lot going on. I'm in town, just baby watch 2018. She hasn't come yet, so we're just waiting on that. Meanwhile, I played in... I've been playing in this comedy basketball league, and guys, we are not very good, but we lost a heartbreaker. We lost a heartbreaker to the Comedy Store on Monday, and double overtime game, and in our stupid league, if you go to double overtime, it's sudden death, and I feel sick. I had a shot right at the end. And I felt like maybe I was fouled, but I still should have made it. I missed, and they came down, hit a three-pointer, and that was the game. I got to be careful out there. A lot of guys are getting injured. We're in our 30s now, so we got to do some light stepping. But I love doing that when I'm in town and can play ball with all the other comedy guys in town. What else? Oh, this week. Oh, this is brutal, you guys. This week, I agreed to do comedy at a birthday party, and I have regretted it ever since I said yes. I knew I was going to be in town, so it's an in-town gig, and birthday parties, anniversaries, anything like that just is a terrible environment. I don't know why I said yes. I think I agreed to do the gig, and then I found out it was a birthday party. It's the same... I've been hired by this company before, and like 3 or 4 years ago, it was to do a Samoan wedding, and I showed up. I didn't know a soul at this wedding. It was down in Orange County, and I show up, and you know, there's like 100 people at this wedding, and they're all Samoans. You know, a lot of them flew in for this wedding. There are children there. There's elders. And that I was like, why am I here? And they said, oh, we saw your clip online. We loved you. We wanted to have you. And they like, as soon as everybody went and got their food, they're like, okay, now you do a half an hour. And so basically I ruined the dining experience for 100 Samoans down in Orange County a few years ago. The DJ was like passing me drinks. He's like, here, dude, you need this. I was like, thanks, bro. That was brutal. Sarah was standing in the grass about 100 yards away, just laughing her ass off at the pain I was going through. And so I fully expect this weekend to be like that, this birthday party. Oh, God, I hope it's good. I don't know why I agreed to it, but I'm in town. Got to take shows in town. The next time I'll be on the road is not till, hopefully, after the baby's born. It'll be, let's see, May 31st through June 2nd. I'm at the Looney Bin Comedy Club in Wichita, Kansas. So if you're in the Wichita area, come out to that. If you know somebody over there, give them a holler. Then on the 16th of June, I'm in Del Mar, California with Cable Guy. And then at the end of June, 28th through 30th, I'll be at the Des Moines Funny Bone. So if you guys are in those areas, come check me out. Then I've got a bunch more tour dates. I'm adding things this summer. Lots of places will be added. So I'll keep you guys posted on that. I want to say, you know, thank you guys for checking out the podcast again. You know, share it with your friends, subscribe, go ahead and rate it on iTunes. All that stuff helps. And enjoy my conversation here with Robbie Slowick. All right. Welcome, everybody. This week on the podcast, we have very funny comedian Robbie Slowick. Robbie is a comic in New York who I used to run a show with out in Santa Monica with. Robbie, how you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. A legendary show, one of perhaps the greatest show in the history of Los Angeles or comedy in general.
You know, you say that to be funny, but last night I was hanging out at the Comedy Store and I was looking at the comics that were there, and Neil Brennan and Greg Fitzsimmons and Andrew Santino and Fahim Anwar like all went back to back to back. And I was like, well, what's the big deal? We had all these guys at our show.
We did have all of those guys at our show. We just didn't have all of the audience members that were probably at the Comedy Store.
See, we were putting on Comedy Store level shows just for 13 people.
Yeah, the lineups could not have been better. The audiences could have been better.
Larry David was almost in the audience one time.
That's true. He was definitely in the restaurant and turned down our invitation to be part of the show, either on stage or in the audience.
Dude, I got to say, we ran that show for a little over 2 years, right?
Yep.
And about a year and a half in, we're outside the club barking people in. We're asking people to come to the show. And we probably had a great lineup. I don't remember who was on the show that night, but Larry David walked in with a date, and I was impressed by you because you immediately started talking to him. I was kind of like, oh God, there he is. I don't want to leave him alone.
Yeah, I wasn't so worried about it. I don't know why. Some people I kind of have that feeling with, but Larry David I didn't, and I love Larry David. I guess I just have a sense like I know this this older complainy Jewish guy because he is my future. You know, I know what this guy's about.
I was impressed because I remember it very well. He was coming in, and you were like, I'm going to ask him to do our show, and we had seen a fair amount of comedians walk past, and I don't think I ever asked one of them to do our show.
Right.
Dimitri Martin walked by one time, critiqued our little sign. Norm MacDonald walked by one time. I did say that I was a big fan of his, but I didn't ask him to do our show.
Having Norm would have been the best as well. God, I love Norm.
And Michael Keaton, remember we saw him like returning something to Banana Republic?
I do remember that. Yeah.
And he was a comic back in the day. But you instantly, you like walked right in. You're like, hey, Larry.
Well, Larry was in the restaurant. Larry was like waiting to talk to the hostess. Like,
yes.
Those other people, we just kind of walked by the front. Larry was there, captive, waiting on a table.
Right.
At a very mediocre like Chinese restaurant that has since closed down because of how mediocre it was.
Well, I remember the night he was there, they showed up a little early, but they were like the only people in the restaurant.
That's true. Yeah.
I have a picture I took as we were setting up, because we used to have to like pull the ladder out from downstairs and hook up our lighting and stuff. And I took a picture with my old like ragged BlackBerry phone. And I still have that. Every once in a while, I'll pass that picture in my little iPhoto, and you can just see his bald head barely, amongst all the empty chairs.
This restaurant was probably, what are you talking, like, probably 8,000 square feet?
It was humongous.
Just massive. And what could the rent on that possibly be on the 3rd Street Promenade? I mean, $15,000 a month at a minimum?
I think that would be very low.
Right. I don't know. $25,000 a month. I don't really know how money works past once you get into four digits. It's foreign to me.
I remember in South Bend, I priced out a little space because I was like, South Bend should have a comedy club. And we were driving past this little place, and it had a for rent sign. I called the number on it just to see how much they charged. I remember being blown away. In South Bend, Indiana, I remember being blown away that it was – I feel like it was like 50 grand a month or something for this tiny little space.
Yeah, that's absurd. So, but this place had, I mean, what, there was never more than like 30 people eating in there. There was a lot of comedy show nights, because some nights when the show was hot, we had like 70 people. We were, by far, the majority of the people in that establishment were for the comedy show. I have no idea how they survived as long as they did.
Probably because of us.
Yeah, and then they were like very, like, they didn't even want to give us free meals. They were the worst. They were absolutely the worst.
Dude, so I remember that night. He comes in, he's waiting for a table for him and his date, and you said, hey, we've got a comedy show starting upstairs in about an hour. We'd love to have you do some time. And he goes, do I have time to go home and get my notebook?
Uh-huh.
And that was very funny and cordial. And then he goes, you going to have a lot of people up there? And you said, well, we normally have like, you know, 20, 25 people. But if we tell people you're going to be there, we probably have 28, 30.
Yeah.
Right away. It got a laugh out of Larry David.
Yeah, he laughed. That was a big moment for me. Yeah. And then he laughed, I think. And that was kind of the end of the interaction. And it was a nice moment. And it's probably the only time I'll ever speak to him. So it was pretty cool.
I don't think that's true at all. I think you and LD, your paths will cross. And probably because he listens to this podcast.
Oh, I know he's a big fan. I know he's
and
a
he'll
big
say,
fan of the
I got to hit him up. I got to hit him up on Twitter. Didn't he join Twitter or something just to like make somebody pay up on a bet?
Oh, did he? No, if he did, I don't know about it, but I would love to see that.
I feel like it was 4 or 5 years ago and somebody said, yeah, if Larry David says something on Twitter about it, I'll give you $100,000 or something. And
oh,
he
really?
Signed up just for that. And he said, time to pay the piper.
That's
or whatever
hilarious.
It was.
Some like older generation comics like that like have really taken to Twitter and really get it. And some are there and it's just like, don't be here. This isn't doing you any good. You don't have to do this.
I can feel like that's me. Not an older generational comic, but just Twitter's not for me.
You know who's like the worst on Twitter? This is crazy. I don't know why the conversation has gone this way, but like one of the funniest comedians of all times, one of the funniest people alive, Chris Rock. His Twitter is unbearable. Like your father, like trying to like run an account, just sharing other people's memes that aren't even funny in the first place.
What is he? Is he doing jokes on there?
Every now and then, and you're just like, "What? Who's writing these? Like, this can't be you."
Dude, you may be pound for pound one of the best Twitter people out there.
I have a good time on it.
Is that what we call you, Twitter people?
I guess so. I don't know. Twitter's fun.
If you guys are on Twitter, follow Robbie. It's at Robbie Slowik, RobbieSlowik. Dude, you and I don't see eye to eye on everything that you tweet about, but every single time I can see the humor and I think it's hilarious.
I appreciate that, man. I have a good time with it. But Twitter's gotten less fun since like everything has gotten hyper political. And I go back and look at like my old tweets sometimes, which is ridiculous, but like prior to like the 2016 insanity, and they were just like fun and funny, and now like a part of it is that and a part of it is like I can't believe I'm like going like 9 people deep in the cabinet. Like, I can't believe the Secretary of the Interior did this. And I'm like, what am I doing? What is my life?
I am kind
right
of
now?
Blown away when you know who some people are. And I'm like, I've never known who that person
is. It's too much. I want to not know again. You know, I want to go back to having no idea.
Now, you were a writer for an HBO show that Jon Stewart was heading.
Yes.
Do you feel like when you were applying to that job, they looked at your Twitter at all?
I know from having like gotten that job and then working with John for so that John, while he doesn't have a Twitter account or tweet, like he does, you know, he scrolls through Twitter throughout the day. He's paying attention to what's going on. Yeah. I think he's mostly getting news from there. I don't think he's like paying attention to a lot of comedy, but, I don't know. I know for like other, showbiz writing type jobs, like they definitely check out your Twitter. Yeah.
You know, a lot of people use it for news. I haven't figured out how to do that because anytime I do the little search and then I'm looking at something, it feels more like clickbait than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of about following like journalist types who are going to just basically tweet out the news without a clickbaity headline that you know, like are teens in your area trading sex for drugs or whatever, and they are, by the way, teens in your area are definitely doing that
in my particular area
in everyone's area. This
gotta
is happening.
Find these teens,
but then you do end up like the people you follow, you end up in your little like echo chamber bubble, and so it's like you should also go out of your way to follow people that you don't like as well, just to see what else is being said.
Now that's an interesting point because I do that. I catch myself doing that on Facebook, and I feel like a lot of people do that. If somebody's writing out or posting an article that you don't agree with and it makes you mad, sometimes I unfollow those people, but I have to make a conscious effort to also leave a fair amount of the fair ones in.
Yes. I also think tone is important, right? Like I'm perfectly happy to disagree with people and that's fine. But when like, you know, it's someone like, oh, another like libtard who, you know, needs their safe space. Well, you know, you don't have a safe space for my AK or whatever. You're like, it's right. too much. Like, that's not even a point of view. That's insanity. But differing on things is fine and good and important even.
Yeah. I did a show in, where was I? I was in Oklahoma City. And I have this gun control joke that makes fun of both sides of the extremes. And this gal pulled me aside after the show. She goes, "You're wrong about your gun control joke." I was like, "Oh, really?" And she's like, "Yeah, yeah. See, it's not just extremes, okay? Okay, so me and my friends, we go out and we like to blow up these things that they're measured on the Richter scale. And we shoot at them." And I'm like, I feel like you might be on the extreme.
You're on the extreme thing. I mean, that's the thing. Like, no one considers themselves extreme. You know?
No,
like,
no, that's just their own opinion.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Shoot, if your shots are measuring on the Richter scale, you're extreme, for sure extreme.
When she said that, I just started to laugh, and she was like, "Why? What's funny?" Because yeah. You are exactly who I'm talking about.
Because
you're an insane
you're
person.
You're shooting earthquake guns.
Indiana, what's up? My kid is over here making noise.
He's got opinions.
What do you think, Indy?
Well, now he's silent. Now he's got nothing to add.
You're right. Yeah. God.
It's always the way it is with hecklers.
The worst character. That is. They always say something. They talk a big game. And then instantly silent when you try and reiterate what they said.
Yeah.
They think better of it.
And
I think
they're young. He's learning the ways of the heckler very young.
I was talking to some comics at the Comedy Store last night about hecklers, and we kind of felt like heckling is a thing of the past. It doesn't seem to happen that much anymore.
There is less of it, but also I don't like, you know, some comics fly off the handle immediately. If anyone right. says anything, and it's just like, how dare, you know, like they lose yeah. it. And I, like, part of what I love about comedy is that I'm not, you know, like, it's not like podcasting. You're interacting with people. And occasionally someone might say something, and if they say the right thing, it can enhance the show. You can have fun with it, and
right.
people want to be part of the experience. And if they're not derailing it or getting in the way or talking too often, like, sometimes it's fun to take that energy and go with it, because that's part of a live experience.
Does that happen quite often in New York comedy?
In New York comedy, a decent amount, because clubs are small and tight and intimate. And,
right,
and,
right.
And there is a good amount of interaction. You know, one of the things that I always cite as, like, a big difference between L.A. and New York comedy is that, mm-hmm. and this isn't universal, there's exceptions, but in general, with a lot of L.A. comedy, the lowest person on the totem pole is expected to host. You know, like, oh, you've been doing
right,
comedy
right.
for 2 years and you'd like to do my show? Like, fine. You can host it,
yeah.
Which sets up this really dangerous thing in comedy, because then you have, like, kind of the lowest skilled person who's got to create the environment for a show. And in New York, there are hosts who are, like, professional hosts. They almost prefer hosting. They're beasts. They get paid more for that spot. And
yeah.
they're vets, you know, 15-year people. And they do a lot of crowd work up top. And kind of condition the crowd. At the end, they say, like, you know, I'm the guy to talk to. You don't yell out to other comics unless they engage you. And in the small rooms, you do end up talking to people, engaging them a little bit, and bringing them into the show. Yeah.
You know, that's interesting, and I hadn't really thought about it like that before. Do you attribute that as a New York thing as opposed to the Los Angeles? How they run things here?
As far as, like, hosts go?
As far as putting, like, seeing that host job as such an important part.
Oh, yeah. It really changes the tone of the shows. And I notice when I go back and forth between L.A. and New York, you know, there are people that are known as hosts here. And
yeah.
You can wear that with a level of pride. It's not like, oh, you're the newest guy. It's like, oh, this guy's such a great host. This lady's such a great host, because they set you up for success.
Yeah,
and that's really important. You're kind of in a bad spot if people are already, if they're coming into, let's say, a show that's at a bar and they don't know what they're walking into, and then someone who's nervous, not particularly confident, it just goes into jokes and doesn't set up the room. You know, you have to turn people into an audience. You're not just automatically an audience because you're all in the same place. Someone turns you into an audience, and then you're fantastic. But if you stay individuals for an entire show, then you're really tough to work with.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I guess I hadn't thought about the difference in size between New York clubs, which one of the
biggest clubs, well, one of the most popular clubs there, only seats, like, what is the cellar seat?
The cellar's, like, right at 100.
Right at 100, and you are within 25 feet of the performer at all time, right?
Yeah, yeah, there's nothing far, yeah, there's probably nothing more than 35 feet away, and then everyone else you can reach out and, like, touch, you know?
Yeah, you almost don't have room for things to get out of control. Like, you need someone to come in there and, like, otherwise it's a fire hazard. If somebody yeah. doesn't run that show properly.
Sometimes we'll talk about how, you know, in L.A. it's not just that a lot of more people are into acting, which is true, but they'll talk about how comics in L.A. do more act-outs, which is, you know, if there aren't, like, diehard comedy fans, when you, like, set something up and then go through the motions of it on stage.
Right.
But there's also stages are 3 or 4 times bigger in L.A. Like, in New York, at a lot of clubs, you really don't have the room for big, sweeping act-outs.
That's true.
Because you got 2 feet on either side of you to work with, and kind of that's it.
I am always surprised when I work with a headliner that kind of seems like just the stand and deliver type guy, and then he's doing these big act outs. I remember being surprised. I worked a few years ago in Tempe with Adam Ferreira, mm-hmm. and I kind of felt like he was just going to be kind of the New York, no nonsense, just stand up. These are the punchlines. And then he had these big, elaborate act outs, and I was just kind of like, oh, wow.
Right. But yeah. And it's nice to see when people can't do that and they get to stretch. And it's fun to see people go from coast to coast and have to watch them, you know, adjust that way. Like watching someone who I love, like Fahim Anwar, who is a big act out guy, you know, like come to New York and have to, you know, adjust for that. And then even seeing as people like kind of conquer New York and move to L.A. And see how that changes their stand-up as they progress as well.
Remember when we had Fahim Anwar on, we ran a backyard show for like a half a minute. And instead of a stage, the guy that lived at that house, he's like, we'll just take this bookshelf and put it on its side.
Yeah.
And people can stand on the back of this bookshelf. But it had kind of one of those like half cardboard, half wood
yes.
backs to it.
Barely.
And Fahim
filing.
Was doing the running man on the back of it, and he fell right through.
His foot just went right through the stage. And he handled it brilliantly, by the way.
Oh, it was incredible. And then the comics the rest of the way had to, like, stand around the hole. There was no more running man to be had.
Well, that's our fault. We should have known that Fahim was likely going to do some type of dance move up there.
He's gonna do. We should have seen the running man coming.
This guy's got moves, you know. Yeah,
of course. I got kids crying in the background.
That's classic showbiz move.
Classic showbiz, right here. The Hofcast. It's not the Hofcast if a kid doesn't come in and interrupt. Now this one's just staring at me with a wicker basket around his neck.
Just what did you want? You to put something in the basket? Is that how that works?
I don't know ever what's happening. And I'm about to have a third one. I don't.
Third and final.
Third and final. Although Sarah keeps saying, "Well, we'll see."
You gotta tie something up down there, buddy. You gotta.
Can you do that without? Can you get a vasectomy without your partner's consent?
Well, of course. Of course you can. I mean,
no, is it recommended? Is that something that someone can do? Would you ever get that done without your partner's consent?
I mean, for me, yes, but I'm vengeful and spiteful and terrible to be in a relationship with.
Against your future children? Or?
And basically anyone who shows me any type of emotional love at all. you know, I would, but no, it's probably not. It's probably something that both parties should agree on.
But what if she says no? Then what do I do? I can't have more children. I won't.
I don't want to get into the weeds of how you avoid it, but there's ways, Nick, basically.
I'm easily tricked.
What I'm saying is there's things you can do to make it not happen.
I'm so easily tricked. I was kind of on board with what you're saying right now before number three, and then now here we are, 3 weeks away from number three.
And there's the kibosh on it, huh? You got to look, if you can keep managing it, if you can manage this household, then God bless you.
I cannot. I'm being punched as we speak the first one. I can't even take care of him.
Then you gotta stop. You know. You can just lie. If I look, this is my one piece of relationship advice to people worldwide, and especially your listeners, is, you know, sometimes you have to lie about things. You know, So I would just say you got a road gig booked for 2 weeks. You'll be working a casino. Go get this operation done. Let the scars heal and come on back home. Tell her how great the
gig
was.
Let the scars heal, like she's going to know.
Yeah, that's true.
If there are scars, I don't think she's looked at me in 3.5 years.
Yeah. So you don't even have to be that elaborate about it.
Okay, so you and then just say, I don't know what the problem is. We never had an issue before.
Yeah, all of
a sudden. I guess we just keep going for it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, man.
See? Indy's on board.
The kids are giggling about it. All right.
They don't want someone else. They don't need a fourth person to compete with.
They get mad when my attention is divided.
Yes.
Like right now, I'm being punched in the arm. Uh-huh. Ever since I said I've been punched, I am being punched. Do you see these fists?
Oh, yes. Mercilessly.
Robbie and I are on Skype. He can see my body moving little by little.
Yeah, he's peppering. There's not a lot of power behind him, but he keeps peppering them. They're going to add up.
I bruise like a peach.
Yeah.
And he's mad because my attention's divided with you right now.
He's not going to get a knockout, but he's going to win on points if it keeps up. If it stays lopsided.
He's dominating.
The judges are going to go 10-9 every time.
All right, Indiana. Move along. I don't want to fight you. Please. That's parents today have no power because we don't spank.
Yeah. No,
I just started doing a joke about it that I try and count to three to threaten him.
Yeah.
But he knows there's nothing at
something
three.
Something has
so
to happen
becomes
at the end of three.
One, two, please.
Yeah.
Please be on my team with this. I feel like we have to spank.
Look, up until kids are about, six, I'm going to just continue on with my theme that the best tool in life is lying to people to get what you need. So up until 5 or 6, kids, they'll believe almost anything, full on, like magic, like if I count to three and I get to three and I snap my fingers, uh-huh. I will make your mother disappear by snapping my fingers. Is that what you want? And they're going to buy that until they're six.
Then when but he
then
also
when
wouldn't
seven,
care.
They're going to, he does not care. He's stone
That's
cold.
That's the problem, Robbie.
Yeah.
He would believe it, and they'd be like, good.
Good.
Make her disappear.
Get rid of her. She's taking the attention away, too.
Moment to moment, he does not care. He does not see 2 minutes into the future.
God bless him. I love that.
Ugh.
He's a power player. Yeah, you can't.
Kind of loud. Here, let me try and take care of this once and for all.
All right. We've lost Nick to fatherhood.
Hey, Sarah. Can you tie Indy to the bed, please?
He's going with the tying to the bed gambit. May or may not work.
This
is very classic father stuff. I've seen this my whole life growing up, is the father giving up and yelling to the mother to handle the situation.
well, she's the only one equipped.
This is old. This is the number one move in all male parenting.
The wait till your father gets home no longer exists because I'm home all day. And they know that I'm not going to do anything.
Yes.
It's not like my dad who would come and just, like, he was a physical apparent, presence that could, like, just take me by the throat and hang me over the kitchen table.
We lost a lot of power when we stopped smoking in the house,
Is that what you recommend I do? Just get a pack of Marlboro Reds?
I just think that you're going to be a little more on edge around dad who's just putting out cigarettes on the couch, You don't know what that guy's going to do.
I love the imagery of that.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You should do a joke about that.
Oh, maybe I will.
I like that. I like that. Made me laugh. Well, it'll make the listeners. They'll enjoy it.
On my little post-it note here.
So what else is going on, Robbie? You got some fun gigs coming up?
I'm doing a theater next month with Gary Goldman, I love working with Gary because I think he's legitimately one of the funniest comics working today, and one of the no one really writes better than that guy.
That Conan set about the state abbreviations was magic.
Yes, it is amazing, and it can even go longer than he did on Conan with it.
I believe it. Yeah, it's only 5 minutes on there. If you guys haven't seen it. Google search Gary Goldman, Conan, and it's about how the states got their abbreviations. It's hysterical.
It's one of the best late night TV sets ever, of which Gary has many great ones. That's it. Actually, while we were on the phone, I just got an email that I'll talk to you about more offline, but it looks like I have an interview for a writing gig that will be out in L.A. for about a month.
Nice.
Yeah. So I don't think I can be public about it at all, so I won't. But that would be fun, and we'd be able to hang out while I was in town.
Yeah, yeah. And you get on the podcast, and you can beat my child. Is it okay for someone else to beat your own kid?
Oh, he's trying to hit me through the laptop. He's aggressive.
Good Lord. See this?
Yes.
I've got scars.
Up until, I don't know what age it is where they just, like, they're trying to kill their father for a good, like, 4 or 5 years.
Is that what? No, I thought it was the mother.
No, they love the mom. They hate the dad for getting in between them and the mom.
Is that what it is?
That's what it is. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You are
and
only,
that last till 5?
I don't know the age that it stops. So right now, all I know is that you're in between them and mom, and they hate you for it.
But mom's out there. I'm trying to get him to go spend time with mom.
Yeah, but as long as you're on this earth, you're a distraction, and he's going to deal with it.
Oh, this sucks. I'm going to deal with this. Hang on.
Okay, Nick is now.
Your foot was cut.
Nick is now taken Indy, and he's trying to hand deliver to his wife. I don't know if she's going to accept the package, but I'm here narrating it for you because I guess that's how podcasts work. You can't see any of this, and neither can I. Now I'm just staring at an empty room with a microphone and a chair, while Nick tries to handle 2 kids, all with the knowledge that a third is on the way, momentarily. Making all of this, one-third harder.
Crap.
I was just explaining the difficulty of your life, knowing that there's another one of these on the way.
And, were you keeping everything rolling right along while I was gone?
I was just kind of saying words, and I'm hoping they make some sense. I did my best radio that I could do.
I appreciate it. Otherwise, I'm going to have to learn how to edit. In this program.
I don't think it's that bad. What I'm saying makes sense, although it's not interesting. It was like a good 30 seconds of C-SPAN about parenting.
Here's the thing. That was very frustrating.
Uh-huh.
And without the ability to spank, I have to put my tongue in between my teeth. Otherwise, I will hurt someone. But if I put my tongue between my teeth, then there's something about, like, my body not wanting to bite off my tongue that I won't be that aggressive.
Okay, yeah. In some ways, you're rerouting the pain that you would like to distribute right back to yourself. Like,
yes.
I will sacrifice. I will take this pain that I should be doling out.
I am basically Jesus.
Yes, yes.
That's me not exactly spanking right. Makes me the Lord.
Uh-huh.
Oh, man, Robbie. You want kids?
Yeah, we're, Casey and I, my long-term girlfriend, realistically.
Also a very funny comedian.
Very funny comedian. Probably should be fiance wife at this point. We're working on it. But right now, still, still girlfriend, 4 years in. She's not thrilled about it. She's got a lot of jokes about it.
What does working on engagement mean?
It's mostly like this multi-year campaign I've had of like trying to explain why diamonds and rings are a bad idea. And,
yes.
And there's other ways to spend money. And I'm just waiting for her to be fully beat down on that, where she accepts that, anything other than that is acceptable. And that's when I'm going to go for it, you know?
So if tomorrow she said, I would take a little piece of twine that I can wrap around my finger if you'll be mine.
Yeah, I mean,
you would do that.
Then we're 95% of the way there, and then
what's the other 5?
Then we really need to talk about the virtues of a inexpensive wedding, you know. it's a lifetime negotiation that she doesn't realize is happening. Basically,
sure.
If I can get out of engagement and a marriage and come out making $65 off the process, then I'm on board.
So what, are you guys going to run a show for your wedding?
Oh, my God, what a great idea. Yeah, yeah.
Charge
now
tickets.
Now we're talking.
And
yes, a cover charge. I like it. This is stuff I hadn't even considered.
Yep.
So we'll do a pay-for bar.
Sure.
We'll also do pay-for meals.
That you guys are taking a cut of.
Yeah, oh, of course. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We'll definitely be charging for meals as well.
Uh-huh.
Anyone is free to give a toast. Like, you're welcome to give a toast to whether you're best man or not, but that costs $65 as well.
Plus a 2-drink minimum.
Plus 2-drink minimum. Yeah, we're going to do okay off of this. I like where this is going.
So, at your wedding, is she closing the show?
Oh, that's a great question. I'm fine with that. Casey's a super great comic. I'd say we're pretty, level wise, we're kind of in the same place.
You take away all those, I'm frustrated being in a relationship with no engagement ring for 4 years. You take away those jokes at her wedding. Can she close the show?
So what's left? You know what? You're right. Technically, those jokes are my jokes. You know?
Oh, Casey, I'm sorry.
But so we are definitely, kids is a discussion, and we talk about it pretty actively, and I think it's something that is in the future for us. Yeah.
Okay. Nice. Well, when that day comes, I'll put you on Skype, and I'll just laugh as a kid just beats you into a pulp.
Yeah, I mean, I'm like heavily against. Like, I think spanking is not a good. I'm against it, and also I think I will flip that switch real early and be like, change my mind. It's great. We need to.
You know
do
what's
this.
Weird is I'm not against it.
Yeah,
I'm not against spanking. I just don't do it because the society tells me not to.
Yeah, I mean, it actually seems like I get it, but also it seems crazy to me as well to be like, well, that's it, honey. I must strike the child.
Like, you know, turn away, I'm striking the youngest.
Bring me the child so I may strike him.
It's a ridiculous thing, but sometimes you feel like that's all that will ever make sense to them.
I mean, I got spanked a couple times growing up. We were not like a regular spanking household. I have like three or four memories of it. One of them is me doing my darndest to get away from my, you know, like before, like the spanking was decided upon, it was going to happen, and then I just took off running around a very small house trying to kind of juke out my dad, who eventually caught me.
Yeah, was it always your dad that spanked you?
Yes, and then my mom was more about like deep emotional scarring. yes, it was always my dad, and it was, I mean, I honestly don't think it was more than three times.
I'm sure that there are times that I do not remember. You know, I can't remember anything before four.
Right.
So I'm sure, because my oldest is four, and I have wanted to hit him since about 1 week into his life.
Well, look, if you don't remember anything before four, it sounds like you got a free pass until then.
I kind of feel like you could do it without hurting them in the long run. And even the ones I remember didn't hurt me in the long run. Like, the pain was temporary, and it kind of like, I don't know, maybe it did get me in the line.
I do think, I do think every adult should be punched square in the face in their lifetime. Probably early, right? At like, even just before adults, 16, 17.
Have you been punched?
I have been punched many times. My nose has been broken a good amount of times. It's a little crooked.
Who's punching you?
Well, you know, I used to be like a martial arts instructor in another
lifetime. But that, outside of that?
Outside of that, not cleanly in the face, but I have
not cleanly.
I have been hit.
Okay.
But you just like, you know, the sudden like shock of pain and discomfort and the watering eyes. And if they catch you like on the chin and you're like throw up, like feeling sick for that. I think it's just good to remember that like someone could punch you in the face and you should tamper your actions.
So like a low level purge.
You just go through your life with the understanding that this is what getting punched in the face feels like, and if your actions on a day-to-day basis warrant you maybe getting punched in the face, you should take that as a serious concern.
Sure, I can get on board with that.
Yeah, and then I'll do the punching. You know, it's because I'm not that hard of a puncher. I think that's I'm a fair compromise.
So you think the punch should be in the moment, or kind of like someone gives you a ticket.
Yeah, it's like it's
good
like
for one punching.
It's like the draft, you know, or it's like you have to, like a military draft.
This is how many times this year you acted like an asshole. Over here.
No, just like, you know, happy birthday. Congrats on turning 16. Please report
it should be on your birthday.
To a punch center within 90 days. Here's the three clubs. It's like a DMV where you just walk in and get clocked in the face and walk out. And then you know for the rest of your life, I don't want to experience that again.
Have you been punchable this year?
I'm probably punchable at some point every year, yeah. But I try to, in New York City kind of raises the blood pressure. So it's like everyone is kind of like a thread away from punching everyone else.
I'm walking here!
Exactly. There's a lot of banging on taxi cabs and people who just like stop at the top of steps like to check their phone when people need to use that as a, and it's just like I might fight you right now. I'm sorry, but I have no choice. I'm doing it for everyone else who hates you right now.
It's that happened to me at the top of an escalator. I forget where I was. I think I was in an airport. At the top of an escalator, somebody just got off and stopped to like send a text, and the rest of us are just coming up, but nobody can move forward, so people are starting to fall down the escalator. Like, the thing is packed. And finally, I just yelled, "Go!"
Yes, because it's crazy. People just don't think. I mean, I get it. We've all been the idiot who's been distracted, but when you're not being the idiot and someone else is, then you're free to absolutely yell at that idiot. You can't stand in a bottleneck area and check your Twitter feed.
So are we punching idiots too, or just assholes?
Everyone. Just 100% of people.
Just 100%
just so you
of
know.
People.
And it might, it's like early intervention, it might stop them from being assholes. It might also make them worse assholes. I don't know. I don't fully think out these ideas.
No, but I like it. I think we've got the roots of something real.
I think so too. Let's write our Congress people and see what we can do about this.
I think this is the year to get it done, man.
That's true. If there was ever a year where you're going
to, I was listening
people.
To a very important podcast. They came up with some really good points.
A lot of good ideas.
What did you call it? You called it the Punch Center?
That's what I called it. It wasn't clever,
but I love it.
Yeah, it's to the point. People know
you
what it is.
90 days to get to this Punch Center.
Yeah. Just
only
take
a note
one
from your
quick
doctor.
Pop to the face, and just then you just go about your day.
Yeah, and on your birthday, too.
If anything, just for some humility.
Don't get a big head. And if you're one of these people that does like a birthday week or a birthday month, it's every day that month.
Yeah, you should definitely be able to, you can get sent back there. The first one is just a freebie. Everyone gets it. And then there'll be things that you can do that get you sent back to the Punch Center.
And it'll be like, we'll do it like the TSA. So if you're a lady, you just get punched by a lady.
Yes.
And if you're a man, we'll just get a man who's just like takes his job too seriously. He's like, no, you stand with your arms apart. I will need to punch you right in the nose.
Could you imagine how like that would be the most sought after job in the United States of America? Would be Punch Center puncher.
Well, I think it would also be sort of healing to people with a bad temper. Like, if you take someone, sort of like, what was a Clockwork Orange, where the guy was doing sadistic things and they made him watch that terrible imagery. You take an asshole that's beating people up and make him punch somebody all day, every day. I think that might...
Yeah, he's
going to
leave work
his...
and be like, oh, I can't punch another person.
Right. Off the clock?
It. Yeah. No. This is...
I'm not at work.
Free. Yeah. Yeah. It's like when someone tells you to, like, go tell me a joke, you know? Oh, you're a puncher? Go punch me. You're like, sorry, buddy.
No.
I'm off the clock.
Yeah, it's a union thing. If I punch off the clock, I'm a scab. Uh-huh. I'm not gonna risk my benefits just to
punch
clock
you. Just to make a point to you.
Dude, I was going to ask you if you had a problem we can solve, but I feel like I think we're really onto something.
Yeah.
Something that'll never get done.
Oh, no.
This'll never happen. But it's not a terrible idea. It's a bad idea, but it's not a terrible idea.
I've had worse ideas for sure. Many, many of them.
Do you have any, like, worldly problems that you think that you could solve given half a week?
No, I don't think I can't solve the problems in my life, and they're very simple problems. You know, they're easy ones. I don't think I'm fixing any world issues here. I can't do a Rubik's Cube.
Well, when you and I worked together in Louisville and we were talking about the national debt, you had an interesting take on that. You said you think...
I think that's all a house of lies. That's all unimportant and can just be ignored.
Okay, elaborate on that.
Well, money isn't... Now I'm going to sound like some crazy hippie, you know?
I found it interesting, and it was a valid point. I can't put it into words the way you did.
Yeah, I don't even remember the entire conversation as much as the point was that we're all floating around with different currencies that are pegged to nothing, really.
Right.
Just kind of the overall strength of your economy, which is hard to really gauge, especially when people are like intentionally obfuscating numbers and cooking books.
Mm-hmm.
And that we are a sovereign country who prints whatever, as much money as we want to print when we want to print it.
Right.
So the like lie that we can't ever carry a deficit because we're responsible for paying out that money to other countries whose future are intrinsically tied to us as well. They need us to buy stuff from them as much as they need to buy stuff from us. It's absurd that we can't afford this social program because, well, that will impact the national debt, which is barely a real thing.
So you think that tomorrow we could just print, you know, whatever it is, $22 trillion and take it in, you know, 47 briefcases to China and be like...
At a point, you have to balance...
Close my account!
You have to balance out inflation because you obviously, if you just print, you'll drive up inflation. But also, if China said, pay us everything you owe us today, we'd just say no. And then what? What are they going to do? They're not going to go to war over money because war costs money. They also need us to be a powerful country because we buy all of their trash, all the plastic consumer
goods. Not as much anymore.
And stuff. We still do, even with a pretend trade war going on. So everyone's tied together. No one can collect on their debt really by force. So if you want to spend on social programs, go ahead and do it because the national deficit doesn't matter.
Okay. Interesting. Do you think that you don't think that chicken will ever come home to roost?
Oh, I think at some point it will in some form or fashion. But if it's not that one, some other, international political monetary crisis will anyway. And you move forward and countries expand. You look at the big bank meltdown of 2008. Someone's looking at all those toxic mortgages and saying, you don't think this will ever come home to roost. And like, it probably will, and it did, and you move forward and it's better. But using the deficit as an excuse to be like, oh, maybe we shouldn't have, you know, whatever, social services for people, unemployment, healthcare.
Because that's kind of where our conversation was, wasn't
yes,
it?
Then it'll cost too much, and I'm saying... it's fine. We have the money. We can print the money. We can pay for this stuff.
Right. Okay. I don't know how to, you know, I am sort of the opinion, and I think this is how we got on that conversation, that I would like smaller government, and then I think you surprised me by saying it doesn't matter.
Yes. I mean, that's the way I feel. But, who knows? Look, there are smarter people who believe the same as me and smarter people who believe totally opposite of me. And there's no right answer to how to govern hundreds of millions of people. It's just a bunch of people trying to do their best. But I will say I prefer the ideology of people who believe it's possible to govern well as opposed to people who believe that government is never the solution, never works, so what's the point? Because then why are you even in the game if you don't think you can do any good?
Right. Do you budget in your personal life?
Yes, I do, because there's certainly consequences for me because I'm not a sovereign nation who prints
sure,
money.
But I suppose there are people that have gone way too far and then they just file bankruptcy, and it's sort of what you were talking about, that, like, in the end, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, look, some people who do that knowingly, it's a little, like, reprehensible, but it's certainly – those guys also claw themselves back out of those situations and make money again and go through the whole system again. And taking advantage of it in whatever way they can.
Gotcha. But you like to live in this, but you think probably it doesn't matter, but you like to live like it does.
In my day-to-day life, I play by the unfortunate rules that I'm surrounded by, which is this piece of paper that says this number on it can get me this many things in exchange. And I need those to get things and pay rent and put food over my head. So, like, I'm part of the system. I want the system to be different, but I play by the rules of the system that I'm in, yeah.
Sure, sure. Well, you weren't for those of you who are listening, you just recently got citizenship, is that correct?
That's correct, yes. December.
Where were you born?
I was born in South Africa, but I was a British citizen, actually, because I grew up there until I was about 7 in England.
Okay. You've traveled more than anybody I know, I feel like.
I'm in, like, a upper echelon of people who've lived a lot of places and traveled a lot, yeah, but...
Anytime I'm thinking about going somewhere, I've picked your brain, and you've never led me astray.
Are you thinking about going somewhere now?
No. Well, yeah, as soon as the baby's born, I'm leaving town.
You're out of here.
Just taking all the money and spending it on myself.
Tijuana.
Just joining a half a dozen country clubs.
Uh-huh.
And just living out the last 6 months of my life with a bang. What? Where would you recommend that's kind of off the beaten path if people were looking to get away, they want to go somewhere cool. Let's do two. Let's do one in the United States, someplace mm-hmm. you've been that's cool that you think isn't that well-traveled, and then someplace, just a foreign country. What would you recommend?
Right now, let's start with foreign country. I think one of the last places I went that I really loved was Croatia.
Really?
Which is starting to get popular, but just like amazing, beautiful beaches, islands, Mediterranean locales, and then also Roman ruins, essentially, of cities that are 1,500, 1,600 years old. So you're walking through these historical places that are very much intact because it was kind of untouched by World War II the way a lot of the rest of Europe was.
Uh-huh.
And then you pair that up with just these like spectacular Mediterranean islands and views and beaches. It's beautiful.
Is it expensive?
It's getting more expensive, but it's really not that expensive right now compared to like Western Europe. You know, you'll get a nice hotel there for, you know, 85, 90 bucks a night.
Okay.
So pretty good. And then I've heard from people, I haven't been there yet, that if you go a little bit further south down to Albania, it's the same beaches, the same coastline, but like a third of the price.
Who's from Albania? Is there a sitcom character from Albania? Is that where Andy Kaufman pretended to be from?
Maybe. I don't know.
Albania, was that Balki?
No, Balki was from Mipanos.
I love that you know that.
Big perfect stranger's head.
I gotta go back and watch that. Does it hold up?
Probably not, I would think. I don't know.
So you haven't watched it recently, but you can pull Manipanos out of your butt?
I mean, I know where Balki Bartokomus comes from, you know?
Balki Bartokomus!
I'm not some loser.
I can't believe you know his full name.
I think after the success, after they rebooted Roseanne and like tried to like sell it as like political, I tweeted something about how I'm going to bring up back other sitcoms and make them political. So I was going to do Perfect Strangers, where Cousin Larry calls ICE on Balki.
Yeah.
For being an illegal immigrant. I think we could get some views on that.
Is Roseanne still going strong?
It's
what
killing.
Are they on, episode 4 or 5?
It's now? Killing. It's doing great. Yeah.
And what do you attribute that to?
I think people,
is it everybody that's not being heard?
No, I think people just missed that. It was such a powerhouse show, and people missed it, so it's riding off that. And then they have an incredible writer's room with some of the best like traditional sitcom writers in the game, including Norm MacDonald. And
is Norm writing on that?
Norm is writing on it, Morgan Murphy, nice. Like real heavy hitters. So it's a good, old-fashioned, fun sitcom.
Why don't sitcoms hire more stand-ups for their shows? It doesn't happen that much anymore.
Yeah, I don't know. In some ways, I think it's because we're not always, like, the importance in scripts is a compelling story. And I think stand-ups can, not always, sometimes they're great at that, but can often be so focused on the joke that
right.
they can put that ahead of the story and ahead of the character development. And then you're left with, like, a lot of really funny jokes, but if the jokes aren't driven by the story, then you're not, it's not compelling.
Trying to think of an example of a show that was like that, where it was very funny, but I didn't give a damn.
Yeah, I don't know, because I ultimately, I guess I don't end up watching them. But that definitely exists.
But that was such a thing. I don't feel like it is anymore, where networks were taking a stand-up and saying, here's your own show. And that was a real big success model for a long time. And now I can't think of one in the last several years that's like that outside of Louis, but that's not even a comedy.
I think it's still happening, actually, a decent amount. I mean, like, you know, Marin had a show on IFC. I think Cristela Alonso has a show.
A sitcom?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's...
What's that on, Comedy Central?
Maybe Netflix. It's still out there, and it's still happening. You know, Gerard had his show.
Right, right, yeah.
But there's just... You know, look, there used to be 12 things on TV, and now there's 1,000 every year. So it's tough to keep up with what's what and what gets popular.
So you're saying they're out there, they're just maybe not on the networks.
Right, they're out there, but they're not necessarily, you know, Everybody Loves Raymond or whatever. But they're still happening.
Is the comedy boom about over?
No, but it is a boom, I think. You know, the Comedy Cellar just opened a location in Vegas, and it's
doing, I saw that. Yeah,
it's doing great. But when like when brand names like that are opening like satellite clubs in places like, you know, Vegas, then you're very much in a boom. I think that follows the trend of the '80s boom as well, when I think the Comedy Store probably had a, you know, Vegas location.
How long did it last in the '80s?
I think it's a good 4 or 5 years. Things are different now. Like we've
been, are we 2 or 3 years in?
Yeah, so we've been in a boom for a little while, but I don't know. The whole world has changed because media is fragmented now, right? Between podcasts, 1,000 channels, YouTube, Vimeo. Streaming.
Are there other podcasts?
No. Just this one. I was talking specifically about this one.
Yeah, don't go looking for other things.
So I don't, and also the prevalence of podcasts has made people, or they, I think it might be part of why a comic-driven sitcom isn't as popular anymore, because people have seen so much behind the curtain from talking about it that now they want something that is different than, well, this is my, you know, Everybody Loves Raymond, which is a fantastic show, and it's kind of loosely based on Ray's comedy. And now people are like, okay, but we know what's like, what's behind the comedy? What are, the gritty thing I heard you talking to Marc Maron about or whatever.
Right. So what's the next thing then? If stand-up is in the heyday and it's got another year and a half, 2 years, you think?
Yeah, but I think it'll look longer than it always survives. It ebb and flows. It'll go down again, and then it'll be popular again, and that's the way it works. The only thing that I know for sure, based on my track record, is that I definitely don't know what the next thing is.
Well, you got to figure that out.
Yeah, but I've stopped trying. I'm always I kind of show up late to the thing.
You know what? Live PD is huge right now. You watch Live PD?
That is Cops, but like live streaming, essentially.
Cops, but yeah, so they're in like 10 different cities or whatever, and anything that's going down in, you know, something goes down in Tucson, they're like, let's go over there, see what's happening, and they interview some drunk guy and hope it blows up.
And they don't need a release for that?
They do sometimes like blur somebody's face.
Yeah.
But probably they like take the drunk guy and they're like, hey, and by the way, we're filming this, $100 sound good?
And that's how he goes from being arrested to like, hold on, wait.
Yeah, maybe they can plea down. I don't know, but it's such a popular thing that I think, you know, live streaming at your Punch Center might be something.
There's something there for sure. People definitely watch, you know.
Punch Center Live, they love the UFC. Why would you not want to see assholes just get pummeled?
Just get crammed in the face. I love it. We finally come to something. We finally hit on something here.
I think we've got our packet for a pitch.
100%.
Okay. Well, I think that's just about it. I have something I want to ask that I think... Okay, so as someone who tweets out regularly, what, 10 times a day?
No.
Five times a day?
Probably 3 times
Two times
a day, really.
3 times a day, okay. So at any given moment, you could die.
Yes.
And then your last tweet is kind of your headstone electronically.
That would be unfortunate, yeah.
So if you knew, like say you're on a plane going down, you can send one last thing out, that's it. What do you want your deathbed tweet to be? Your lasting, the last thing you leave humanity with, is it something sentimental? Do you leave them with a joke? Do you say, I love you, Mom? What's your last correspondence with the world in the form of a tweet?
I would say the very last thing I tweeted was like, would be like, at least I was never on Live PD.
And you're going to have to put a link to the podcast so people can know what the hell you're talking about.
Yes, will do.
I appreciate that. I hope you die soon.
Thank you, Nick.
We need listeners.
Okay. I'll do my best for you.
Okay. Anything you want to plug? Anything you want to talk about?
No, I'm good. This has been fun. Thank you for listening, everyone who is.
Where's your show with Gary?
The Paramount Theater in Long Island, which is one of like the coolest theaters around. I really love that place.
If you're in the area, Robbie is so funny. Gary's amazing. That'd be a great show to go to.
June 15th in Long Island.
June 15th, Long Island. Follow Robbie on Twitter. I don't think you do Instagram very much, right?
Very occasionally. People don't want to see my face.
Twitter's the place. And, you know, if he's doing shows, if you're in New York City, check out his calendar. It's very funny. I highly recommend him. Thank you guys for listening. Thanks, Robbie. Thanks for being a part of this.
Of course. Thank you.